Samuel 27 said tonight's going to be a flight of despair for David. He's just come off this second incident with Saul. Saul has him just about surrounded, and David goes into the camp, takes Saul's spear and a jug of water, and spares Saul's life again. But that whole incident leaves David in a rather fragile state of mind, because he picks right up in chapter 27, verse 1, "Then David said in his heart, 'Now I shall perish one day by the hand of Saul. There's nothing better for me than that I should escape to the land of the Philistines.'" So David has made up his mind on a course of action now to leave Israel and go into the land of the Philistines, because he's convinced, because of this last episode with Saul, that there's no way Saul is ever going to back off. He's always going to be chasing him. He said he would back off once, and he didn't. And so now David has spared his life again, and so David can foresee that if he stays in Israel, Saul will be on his heels once more. So he says, "What else have I got to do? I have no other options except to go into the land of the Philistines." Now, we don't get any specific comments by the Lord at this point, whether or not this is what the Lord wanted David to do, except if you go back to chapter... I lost it. Where'd it go? Sorry, I lost my note there. Chapter 22, verse 3. David went from there, which is the cave of Adullam, where he hid after he tried to go to Philistia the first time. And he went to Moab. And he said to the king of Moab, "Please let my father and my mother stay with you till I know what God will do for me." And he left them there with the king of Moab, and they stayed with him all the time that David was in the stronghold. Then the prophet Gad came to, the prophet Gad said to David, "Do not remain in the stronghold. Depart, go into the land of Judah." And so David departed and went into the forest of Hereth. This is the one statement we have from the Lord about where David is supposed to be during this time. He said, "Don't stay in Moab. I want you to go back to Judah." So if we come to our map, just to refresh our memories over here, here is the nation of Israel. David started up here at Gibeah, where he fled from Saul. He went south to Nob, visited the priests in the city of Nob to inquire of what God wanted them to do and to get provisions. So there he got the bread, and he got Goliath's sword, and then he fled over here to Gath, hoping to be conscripted into the service of the king of Gath. Well, he recognized very quickly that they recognized him as one of Saul's mighty men and were going to kill him. So he pretended to be crazy, let the spit run down his beard. That's never a fun feeling, having stuff hanging from your beard. We don't have any other bearded guys with us tonight. So really, guys, come on, let it grow. And go ahead. Goatees. I think Eldon would look great with a goatee on. And he's saying, "I don't think." Of course, you might have to check with Carolyn to see if she would like you with a goatee. Oh, has she? Okay. So, my stepdad used to wear a much thicker beard than I typically do, and he drove a motorcycle all the time, so he would have to come home and comb the bugs out of his beard. And so he'd just stand at the sink and it'd fill up with dead gnats and butterflies and all kinds of crazy things that get stuck in there. So David pretended to be crazy in front of the king of the Philistia, Achish. And from there he fled to Adullam, hid in a cave for a little while, and people started gathering to him, and he swelled his numbers up to about 400. He is, throughout this time, whipping these 400 guys into shape, turning them into a very disciplined fighting force, and he uses that to protect Israel from invasion. And he has a chance to do that because the Philistines come up to invade Keilah at the harvest. And so David goes down and protects Keilah from the Philistines. Well, Keilah doesn't respond very kindly, and they send and let Saul know that David's staying at Keilah. And so David departs, and he wanders around here in the southern regions of Ziph and Moan, but staying out of the cities and living in the wilderness. Well, the Ziphites send an envoy to Gibeah to let Saul know where David is at. So Saul comes down and nearly has David cornered. That's the account where Saul's going around one side of the mountain and David's on the other. And Saul has almost got him trapped when news of a Philistine invasion comes and Saul has to retreat and let David go. From there, David went over to En-Gedi, stayed there for a while. So he has been wandering back and forth over here in the southern regions of Judah because God told him, don't stay in Moab, go back to Judah. Well, at this point, he's facing such discouragement from Saul and his continual pursuits that he's willing to go back to Philistia. He says, this is my only hope. This is the only option I've got left. And this is where we see that sometimes in our lives, discouragement can really lead us to make decisions that probably aren't exactly what God would want us to do. It's going to be a story of the trouble that can be caused when we don't follow God's plan for us. But it's also going to be a story of encouragement because even when we don't follow God's plan, guess what? He doesn't just cast us aside. He doesn't say, well, you blew it, you're off, get out of here. He's going to use David for some pretty mighty things in the next coming chapters. Because we are wrapping up the book of 1 Samuel, believe it or not. And David's wandering time is just about coming to an end. But at this point, David he's in despair and he's discouraged. And so he's reasoning within himself, I've got nothing left to do except to go into the land of the Philistines. Then Saul will despair of seeking me any longer within the borders of Israel, and I shall escape out of his hand. So he really feels at this point he's got no other option. Even though I think if he would have remained in Judah, God would have continued to protect him as God said he would. But that's where we get sometimes in life, isn't it? Things just get so bad where we think, you know what, I got no other choice, and I'm just going to go this direction. And while I think it is disappointing to the Lord when we evidence such small faith, He knows us. One of my favorite Psalms, 103, is that as a father pities his children, so the Lord pities those that fear Him. He remembers our frame because He knows that we're but dust. God knows we're weak, folks. He's so gentle with our failures. And those that fear Him, God is gentle. He is kind. He's good. And so even when we completely abandon Him, He never abandons us. And that's going to be shown in David's life here. That even though David's willing to say, that's it, I've got no other hope, God can't save me here in Judah anymore, I'm going to the Philistines where Saul doesn't have a reach. God's going to do some neat things. And so, his plan is, I'm going to Philistia. Now, if you remember, the border of Philistia is down here in the flat coastal regions. We kind of know this by another name. You should recognize the name of this town right over here. Gaza. Philistia roughly is equivalent to the Gaza Strip. It extends a little farther north and a little farther inland than the Gaza Strip currently does, but the Gaza Strip is somewhat where Philistia was in biblical times. And in fact, when the British were dividing up the Holy Land at the beginning parts of the 19th century after they conquered it from the Ottomans, in trying to decide what to call it, they called it Palestine because if you take the Hebrew word Philistine and take out the vowels, because you guys know Hebrew didn't originally have any vowels. Those have been added over the centuries to help us silly people learn how to pronounce it. People back then were much smarter than we are now. We have to have our vowels and our punctuation to understand. But original Hebrew didn't have vowels, and so the consonants in Philistine are the same consonants in Palestine, except we pronounce the P like a P instead of a F. But the Hebrew letter Pe can be pronounced P or F, depending on what word it's used in. It can be either a hard P sound or it can be a PH sound. And so when they called it Palestine, they were calling it that because in biblical times it was referred to as Philistine. Philistine. So anyway, David is heading over here. He's going to go into the Philistine region. There were five major cities in Philistine: Gath, Ekron, Ashdod, Ashkelon, and Gaza. Those were the major cities of the Philistines. And so what's David do in verse 2? So David arose and went over, he and his 600 men who were with him. So he's got this pretty sizable force. And by this point, David's been wandering for probably 3 years now. And he has these men whipped into a pretty disciplined fighting force. They have fended off attacks from the Philistines. They have protected Nabal and his sheep from roving marauders. So they are a pretty disciplined fighting force. So David takes this small army with him to Achish. Remember, Hebrew is great because you got to get that guttural sound in there. Achish, the son of Maok, king of Gath. Right up here is Gath. This is the same city that David went to when he first fled from Saul. Now, I'll be honest, I'm kind of befuddled by David's reasoning here. Last time he went to Gath, he went to Achish, and Achish tried to kill him. So at this point he says, I've got a great idea. I'm going to go back to Achish. The only thing I can figure is that David is assuming that 3 or so years of running from Saul will have convinced Achish that David is no longer one of Saul's mighty men and trusted men, and that might grant him a better hearing. So that's his plan. I'm going to go to Achish, the king of Gath. Now we met Achish before when David went to Gath. You meet Achish again when Solomon is king. Now David reigned as king for 40 years. And 3 years into Solomon's kingship, a servant of his left Jerusalem and went to Gath to chase down some slaves, and he went to Achish. So Achish, probably at this point, is a very young king because he's going to be king for another 45 years or so. So he's going to sit on the throne for a very long time, which means at this point, Achish is probably quite a young man. Maybe about the same age as David. Maybe that's why David hopes he can find some favor in the eyes of Achish. It's also going to explain to us in a couple of chapters when Achish is marching to battle against Israel, why the commanders of the army get to tell Achish what to do. Because as they're marching out and David is coming along with them, the commanders of the army look at Achish and say, there's no way the Hebrews are coming with us. And the king listens to his commanders. And why would that be? Probably because he's a young king. And so he hasn't established the authority and the leadership over his commanders quite as strong as he will later in his reign. But those are some things that go along with why David might be coming back to try this plan again. Well, this time it seems to work. David lived with Achish at Gath, he and his men, every man with his household, and David with his two wives, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail of Carmel, Nabal's widow. So David goes there not just with his 600 men, but also with their families. Must have just about taken over the town of Gath, although it was a pretty large city. But to bring in somewhere between 600 and 1,000 new people, not of your nationality, well, we think we have immigration scares, and Europe has immigration scares. So here's Gath, and they've got 1,000 Israelites coming into the town and living there in one of the capital cities. So it was an interesting setup. But for some time there, David and his family and his men and their families live with Achish in the royal city of Gath, and they're staying there in the city. And when it was told Saul, verse 4, that David had fled to Gath, he no longer sought him. Obviously, because Saul has absolutely zero jurisdiction in Gath. It's not as if Saul and the Philistines had signed extradition treaties, and he could appeal to the friendship with his Philistine neighbors, saying, hey, you know, I really need David sent back for trial. Philistia and Israel were mortal enemies. And so David's quite safe from Saul where he's at. Saul has no reach here in Philistia. But after some time, apparently David is going to get a little bit claustrophobic living in the city. I mean, after all, you've been out in the wide open country for 3 years or so, camping in the caves and just having lots of fun. Dan just showed me a cave up in Wisconsin that he camped at one time. Linda, did you go with him and camp there? No. I bet you have to take a bedroll with you to sleep on that hard rock. Yeah. Air mattress. There you go. Air mattress. Yep. So, anyway, David's been sleeping in those caves and out in the open for quite a while. Now, of course, it's no news to him. He was a shepherd boy growing up, so he's used to sleeping outside. So probably staying in the city is feeling a little confining to him. We were talking about narrow gates and things this morning, and I was going to mention, but we just didn't quite have time. A friend of mine in West Virginia was a coal miner for years and years and years, and he used to tell me stories about crawling through a 2-foot coal seam to mine. And I say, oh boy, that's just a lot of rock sitting above your head, and I think I'd go nuts. I'd probably be one of the guys that would get down there and just my mind would collapse. You'd have to drag me out and tie me to a tree or something. But crawling through a 2-foot coal seam to mine. But he did it and he loved it. He said he loved mining. Yeah, the only reason he quit is he got injured. He had two bad knees and hurt his wrist, so he couldn't use his hands hardly anymore. But he loved mining. Thought it was a great career. Let's see. More power to you, buddy. So anyway, David's feeling cramped in Gath. So David said to Achish in verse 5, "If I have found favor in your eyes," which apparently means David's been here for a little while, probably not real, real long, but he's been there for a little while, enough time for him to become trusted in Achish's sight. And he says, "If I have found favor in your eyes, let a place be given me in one of the country towns that I may dwell there. For why should your servant dwell in the royal city with you?" So he's placing himself again way under Achish. So he's saying, look, I'm just your servant. There's no reason I need to be in the royal city with you. And probably David knows that Achish welcoming him and 1,000 Hebrews into town is not politically expedient for Achish at this point. So he says, hey, send me out to the country. Let me dwell in one of the outlying towns on the border of Philistia. It'll be more spacious for me, for my families, and it'll probably cause you less trouble. So Achish, that day, gave him Ziklag. Ziklag is right down here. Such a pretty sounding name, isn't it? I mean, it just rolls right off your tongue. Ziklag. Ziklag originally was allotted to the tribe of Simeon. When Joshua conquered the land, the city of Ziklag was allotted to Simeon. So apparently, in the 400 years or so since Joshua conquered the land, well, about 300 years, Ziklag has been taken over again by Philistines. And apparently, fairly recently for David's time, because Achish gives David the entire town, which seems to imply to us, though not definitively, seems to imply that there's not too many people living there. So that Achish can just hand this town over to David. And that explains something that the writer of 1 Samuel wanted to explain to his immediate readers. And we understand sometimes we find notes in Scripture from the writers that are explaining things to their contemporaries. So to us, it wouldn't make a whole lot of difference to us to know that therefore Ziklag belonged to the kings of Judah to this day. But up to the time of the writing of this book, Ziklag is a royal city. It belongs to the king of Judah. It's his personal property. How'd you like that? Most of us are just content to have a house to live in. David's got an entire city. Calls it his own. So, well, some people have summer houses. I guess the king of Israel gets a winter city to go to. So, but this is explaining a situation that existed when the writer of 1 Samuel wrote the book. So apparently when the book was written, it was still recognized that the town of Ziklag belonged to the royal court. And he's explaining why. Why did it belong to the royal court? Because Achish gave it to David. And so it still belongs to the royal family. And the number of the days that David lived in the country of the Philistines was 1 year and 4 months. This is the first reference we have gotten in quite a while as to timing. We've made some inferences about how long David has been on the run, but this is the first time that we get a definitive date. And so if we put these things together, we can put a timeline together as to when David was running from Saul. We know that Solomon built the temple, and the foundation of the temple was laid in the 480th year after the Israelites came out of Egypt. That is specifically stated for us in Scripture. Love when God gives us those exact times. We know that that was founded in Solomon's 7th year. So that can back us up. 483 years after the Exodus is when Solomon came to power. David reigned for 40 years. And so we know that we're now at 443 years after the Exodus, when David becomes king in Hebron over Judah. And then we back it up another 1.5 years. So this gives us really a pretty good date of when David is hiding from Saul in Philistia. But he's there for 1 year and 4 months. It also illustrates to us, as we've said at the beginning of the chapter, sometimes when we depart from God's ideal for us, it can take us on little strays, can't it? So for the next 1 year and 4 months, David's going to be off in Philistia. God is still going to use him. God hasn't dropped him, but there he is. Outside of God's land, outside of the covenant people. And David himself even said, when last time he talked to Saul, that he didn't want to be away from the inheritance. He didn't want to live outside of Israel, but here he is because he feels like he has no other choice. However, David's not going to use this time idly. He probably had an ulterior motive for requesting to live in a town far away from the royal city. Because here's what he's doing. Now David and his men went up and made raids against the Geshurites and the Gerzites and the Amalekites, for these were the inhabitants of the land of old, as far as Shur to the land of Egypt. Now we don't see Egypt on here unless we zoom out just a little bit. We don't see it at all because my map doesn't go over there. Egypt, of course, is over here. So David, from his headquarters at Ziklag, is venturing out and committing raids against the inhabitants of the land, the non-Jewish inhabitants of the land. So he's heading over here. The Amalekites dwelt in this region. Can you imagine how bored David would have been if Saul had done what he was supposed to do? Why are the Amalekites still there? Because Saul didn't finish the job he was started. He allowed many of them to escape. And so they've come back to the area and they've begun to rebuild in the last few years. But God's going to use David to work on this plan of eliminating the Amalekites. So the Amalekites live down here. We're not really sure where some of these others live, the Geshurites and the Gerzites. But these are enemies of Israel, and David is using his time in Philistia, protected from Saul, to strengthen Israel. So we can't think, just because he made a decision in the despair of the moment, he hasn't forgotten what God has called him to do. And he's still doing it. He's still acting like the king of Israel by protecting Israel. So he's going off into these towns and attacking all the inhabitants of the land. Now he's got another big part of his plan here. David would strike the land and would leave neither man nor woman alive, but would take away the sheep, the oxen, the donkeys, and the camels, and the garments, and come back to Achish. He is living as a servant of Achish now, so he has to come back and report what's going on, and any servant of Achish that went out and captured a town would be required to present some presents. Your taxes, basically. Achish wants his share of the booty. And so he would bring some of the loot back to Achish to present to him. And as long as the amount was coming in was a hefty sum, Achish wasn't real concerned with where it came from. But when Achish asked, "Where have you made a raid today?" David would say, "Against the Negeb of Judah, or against the Negeb of the Jerahmeelites, or against the Negeb of the Kenites." We find another interesting predicament here is that because David has wandered off this path of where God wanted him to be, God wanted him to stay in the land, And he went off to the Philistines. Now he finds himself in the difficult position of having to lie to Achish about what he's doing. He's using the opportunity to strengthen Israel, but he knows if Achish finds out about it, it's going to be all over. And so he tells him, even though he's going to attack the Geshurites or the Gerzites, he's telling him, I'm attacking the Israelites. He says, I went up against the Negev of Judah. Negev of Judah. Negev is the Hebrew word for south. So the Negev is down in this area. And so it's the south of Judah. He's saying, I'm going to attack the south of Judah, or I went to attack the south of the Jerahmeelites, which was a Judean tribe, or I'm attacking the Negev of the Jerahmeelites or the Kenites. These were all families within Israel. So David's being a little less than honest about things, engaging in some subterfuge to lead Achish off his trail. But he has made sure that nobody could bring back news, because David's taken care of every man and woman who could bring back news to Achish and tell him differently. So he thinks his plan is safe. Achish is never going to find out what's going on. And David would leave... We didn't read that. And David would leave neither man nor woman alive to bring news to Gath, thinking, lest they should tell about us and say, so David has done. Such was his custom all the while he lived in the country of the Philistines. The result of all this subterfuge, Achish trusted David, thinking he has made himself an utter stench to his people Israel. Therefore, he shall always be my servant. Achish thinks that David, going on these missions, is completely alienating himself from the Israelites. And so that David's going to be completely stuck, having to stay in Philistia for the rest of his life. Little does he know what's actually going on. But here David's made this decision in his despair. And yet it's a great lesson to us that God uses us even when we fail. God picks us up because ultimately, we are all just rusty tools anyway. Nothing that ever gets accomplished is ever because of us. In fact, I'm constantly amazed that God ever gets anything done once we get our hands on it. But He does. Because what gets done is done by Him. He works through human agency. Praise Him, He does. But it's not because of us. So if someone comes to Christ, it's not because I was so great at convincing them how wonderful Jesus is. It's because the Spirit of God opened their eyes. Somebody performs some service in the church. It's not because we begged them and pleaded with them. It's because God laid it on their heart. So it's a wonderful lesson to us of how God works, that even through our failures, God uses us to accomplish His goals. And so here's God using David to strengthen Israel during this time where David is discouraged and in despair, and he's fled to a place that he shouldn't be, and yet God's going to use him, and God's preparing him. Now, David's decision is going to have some consequences later on, which we're going to run into. Our decisions do have consequences, but they're never as bad as we think they're going to be. Because God has a way of rescuing us out of our own troubles. And isn't that the point of what Jesus did? Now, it doesn't mean that I'll always escape the consequences of the decisions that I make in this life. But it means that Jesus is my Redeemer. And He takes what I broke and He can fix it. And He takes what I muddled and He can make it clear. And He takes what I've destroyed and He uses it for His glory. And so keep your eyes fixed on Him and not on yourself.